Okay, now it's working. All right. This is Ann Cox interviewing Blanche Beck on October 12th, 2003. Can you just start out telling me when and where you were born?
I was born February the 23rd, 1946. At a place that was called Watts, Kentucky. The post office was Watts, Kentucky. It's no longer there, as many of the little post offices have been consolidated to larger post offices here in town and elsewhere. And I guess that's when I was born and where.
Where is Watts compared to Jackson?
To Jackson. It's about... I guess it's about midway between here and Hazard, and that would be about 15 miles, probably 12, 15 miles from Jackson. Be southeast.
Mm-hmm. Did you come to Jackson directly from there when you...
No, I grew up. I was a Watts from Watts and grew up on Watts.
Okay.
Till I was 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in going into third grade, we got a road. I went to a one-room school prior to that, and we got a road up that way. It was a gravel road, and they consolidated the schools more. At that time, I guess there were 100 or more small community schools, and now we only have, I think there's about three or four elementaries and one high school and one middle school now in the county. So they bused us in. We rode the bus for over an hour.
Wow. What brought you to live in Jackson?
I guess I went off to college in Moorhead in northeastern Kentucky, and then my husband was drafted into the Vietnam era, and at that time I was teaching at Lee's College. And of course, being the youngest and the least experienced, when there was a reduction in staff and the enrollment no longer supported my job, I lost my job, and my husband was a PVT in the drafted in to the military. So I was here, and of course my family is here, and I went with him in the military, and we ended up in Virginia and in Kansas, and we spent 7 or 8 years in Kansas. Spent some time after he got out of the military, and then the coal boom actually is what brought us back.
Mm-hmm.
The coal boom is now turned to bust, as you probably know,
mm-hmm.
In Breathitt County. And we were, I came back and worked in the schools, vocational schools and the high school and the elementary, all different levels of school and different positions. And my husband worked for the coal company. And it was a really exciting time. It was in the mid to late 70s and 80s into the early 1990-91. I think the coal business pretty much shut down,
mm-hmm.
Or slowed down very much. But it was an exciting time, and I'm glad that, having grown up in Breathitt County, that I had that opportunity to participate in that boom cycle.
Mm-hmm. How old were you when you were married?
I had finished college and taught school a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I was 22 years old.
Can you talk a little bit about what it was like growing up around this area?
Well, I can show you a model of the house that I lived in. Let me show it to you.
Okay.
My nephew is artistic, and he actually made it out of match stems, and it's quite unique. Looks very much the same today, except one of my older brothers own it now, and nobody's living in it right at the present time. He does rent it from time to time, and he has painted it a different color, but I guess you'd call it a farmhouse. And it was a great big farmhouse, and it was probably one of the nicest houses on the creek there. And it still has these real pretty aluminum shingles on it. And it had two chimneys, and front porch and a back porch. And you'll see this quite often in eastern Kentucky. Not until I was in college do we get our first bathroom. And you can see that they often take in part of the porch and make a bathroom. And when I was like in third grade, these two rooms were built on, and we called them the living room and dining room, because I had such a large family that these four huge rooms, the house was primarily L-shaped with four huge rooms, and then we added two other good sized rooms and a big front porch and a big back porch. It's a big house. And nice yard, and there's a stream called Todd Holler that runs this way, and the main creek is called Leatherwood Creek that runs this way. So it's, and we had bottoms in this direction and up here, and my father gave land that an old regular Baptist church is built on, and for years he was like the treasurer of the church, and he and my mother both, I can remember when they were baptized and became members of that church. And my grandparents had started the church, I think, when they met in schoolhouses and in their homes. And my dad was fairly progressive for his time. He was a great reader. He always took, at that time, the Lexington had two papers, the Lexington Herald and the Lexington Herald Leader, and we always took usually the Courier Journal and the Lexington Herald. Both that came every day to our house, which was really unusual for that time period while I was growing up, or people to read like that, like he did. And he bought lots of books, and so I was exposed at an early age to lots of printed material. And we had over here a barn with a horse named Old George, and I can still remember, we had, then later the barn in the crib, my brother got snake bit in the crib, and they, up the mountains were over here called the Silver Mine area, and they even farmed and had orchards up in the top of the hills. And then later, I was still pretty young, in like the second, third grade, we built a huge barn over to the other side when the road went through. The road went around this way. Actually, the road was the creek, and people just walked beside of the creek. And this actually is the front of the house, but then the road came around the back of it and kind of changed things.
Did your parents have the same jobs?
My mother had the same job. She was a mother and a homemaker, and a very good one, always. And my father was a grader operator. He worked for the State Highway Department for years and years, and retired there. And he usually operated the grader. And I can remember being little, and when he was grading an hour into the county, he'd bring the big grader home with him and park it right out here, and we'd play on the big grader.
Did you only have one brother or?
Oh no, I'm number 10 out of 13 full-term babies. Oh. And they raised 11 of us to adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother always said, claimed the two that she had miscarriages with. She even claimed those as her children.
Mm-hmm. Did you all live in that house?
As far as I know, I was conceived there and born there. She birthed all of us there, and usually my grandmother, who was a midwife, delivered us. And there was another midwife on the creek that, if my grandmother was not available, a few times.
Mm-hmm. Were your aunts and uncles nearby?
Oh, of course. Actually, the Nobles and Wattses intermarried, and they settled Whole Creek. As a matter of fact, the Nobles settled that end. My family settled that end of Breathitt County, and we're one of the first families in Breathitt County.
So your main name is Blanche Noble?
No,
oh, okay.
Watts.
Watts, okay.
And my mother was a Noble.
Oh, okay.
And of course, they were, almost everybody on the creek really married some distant cousin.
Mm-hmm. Is that how you met your husband?
No, he's not a cousin. He's from the other end of the county.
Oh, okay.
I don't claim any kin to the backs.
Seems like there's so many backs. I can't get them off straight.
No, there aren't that many backs in Breathitt County, really, compared to the Nobles and Wattses.
Mm-hmm. How did you meet Hazel Martin, my mom's cousin?
How did I meet Hazel?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was teaching at Breathitt High, and Hazel's cousin, Addie Martin Murphy,
mm-hmm.
Was teaching next door to me, and I was saying how I really needed somebody dependable to help me clean my house. And she told me that, I said, who's doing yours, you know? And she said that her cousin Hazel was. So I said, do you think Hazel would help me out? And she said, yes. And that turned out to be just a great relationship that
mm-hmm.
lasted till I moved from that house about 9 years.
Mm-hmm. Did a lot of your relatives leave? Have you seen a lot of them leave?
Oh, yes. I've seen them leave and return and leave and return. And there's something that's really the same as I have, you know,
mm-hmm.
Due to economic reasons
mm-hmm.
and matters of the heart. It seems that we're constantly drawn to this beautiful area of the country and because our people are here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always a sad thing to have to leave our families to go and get work.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I doubt if your grandfather, if he could have found a job, he would have never left here.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you think all those people, how do you think all those people leaving affected the people who never left? Do you think?
Well, I can tell you that it was exciting when I was growing up. My older brothers and sisters, I knew when they graduated from high school that they, some of them went to college. Several of them have college degrees and advanced degrees in my family. But generally, they wanted to go to the city to find out what it was like there. And to get a job and to get a car and to get things, material things,
mm-hmm.
as well as to learn about the world, a different culture. And how it affected me when I was growing up is that my sister would buy me things and come back on weekends, and I found it terribly exciting that she had new clothes and would tell me about things that were going on there and really expose me to different way of life, not necessarily better, but different.
Mm-hmm.
And That was enriching and good, I felt. My parents, of course, the parents were sad because they lost their children.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always exciting when they came home. And seems like we always had a big garden, and we thought it was important to can lots of stuff and give them lots of garden food and things like that to take home with them, a part of home to take back to the city with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I really felt like, upon reflection, after I've grown up, that a lot of times, and they spent so much time, the roads were so poor, coming home, that they really didn't have time to become a real member of that community.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that there were really, a lot of times, their goal was to come back here and buy a piece of land and have a home here. That was really where their heart was. And a lot of them, I felt like, drank a lot because of that when they went to the cities. And I felt like they maybe gathered in little enclaves in the city that were poor parts of the town. And the men drank too much, especially the men, because of it. And they didn't really participate or learn about the museums and the cultural kinds of things there because they were spending all their time and effort trying to get back to Eastern Kentucky
mm-hmm.
and come home on the weekends and see their families.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, I felt like that, that was not, that they were torn, and that was not a good way to spend their time and energy necessarily. And I do think that it contributed to drinking more.
Mm-hmm. How did all of those people, the fact that all of those people left,
there was a great influx during the coal boom.
Mm-hmm. And that was in the 70s?
And 80s. Mostly the 80s was the big boom time. In the mid 70s through the 80s to 90
mm-hmm.
was the big boom time.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, people had never, and actually a lot of them had so far to come financially that they didn't handle their prosperity very well. A lot of times they wasted the good salary that they made, and really they were just making a good salary, but it seemed like such big wages compared to not having had mm-hmm. That great a job in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But they were very good wages, and it was also very hard work, and my husband says that the employees were the most efficient and dedicated. He's worked lots of other places as he's ever seen anywhere, is the men and women, and so many people came home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what brought us back, was the coal boom. We had just turned 30 years old, and we were doing very well out in the Midwest. We had a brand new home and two rental properties and two very good jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But we chose to give that up and come back
mm-hmm.
and take our chances on getting a job with the coal company. And we don't regret doing it.
Mm-hmm. How long were you gone?
Well, basically, since I was 18 years old,
oh, okay.
I went off to college, and then I came back. My mother died, and I felt obligated to come back and take care of my dad, a little brother, which is kind of typical Eastern Kentucky thinking. Not necessarily right or wrong, but that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed home and taught school when I was 21 years old. And then I got married and left, and went back to school and finished graduate school and came back and taught at the college here
mm-hmm.
for a short period of time. And then Ken was drafted. And then while the year he was finishing officer candidate school, I taught in an adjoining county after I lost my job for staff reduction at the college. And then I left with him and followed him with the military. And we stayed in Kansas for 7 or 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we came back, and my brothers had moved back from Ohio. And were doing just absolutely. I saw their paychecks and my eyes lit up, and my husband went back and he quit and came back, and I went to work, of course, in education, and he worked for the coal company for till it closed down, and then they rehired him and he worked at the corporate office a while.
Did you have family who never left?
Oh, sure. I had family that never left. And actually, they've done very, very well for themselves here in Breathitt County.
Mm-hmm. How did they make a living when everybody was leaving, not finding a job?
Well, they left too.
They left too?
Yes, they did. And they went up to Cincinnati and mostly around the Cincinnati area and Newport, Covington, Cincinnati area, and got jobs in the factories and did quite well for themselves. And with the coal boom, just like I came back from Kansas, they quote came home.
Mm-hmm.
We always called it coming home.
Yeah, but they never actually left. They just worked in Cincinnati.
Well, they had apartments up there, okay. And some of them have homes.
Okay.
Had homes.
But did you have family who never left?
A few.
Mm-hmm. What did they do?
Well, actually, they had their stint in Cincinnati and came back.
Okay.
I think we all left and went up there and did some work in out of state.
Mm-hmm.
And then chose to come back.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what, like, my mom's cousins, Hazel,
uh-huh,
and her sisters, they've never left.
Uh-huh.
Do you know how they survived?
Well, I think her husband worked in the sawmill, and I think Hazel cleaned my house for me and was absolutely fabulous at it.
Mm-hmm.
She was just so smart. I still do things she taught me how to do, you know. And actually, if you're asking me about what are the jobs here in Eastern Kentucky in the 70s and 80s, and even now,
mm-hmm,
they're really service related jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And you either work in the school system. You work in government, county, state government, or like the highway department. Now we have a lot of fast food places that people work,
mm-hmm,
or restaurants, but it was mostly, we have almost no manufacturing jobs. We have a little struggling a factory over here in Jackson, but it's never really been a huge employer.
Mm-hmm.
It's either extracting the timber or minerals or coal or whatever, or it's service related,
mm-hmm,
jobs.
Has there ever been a time since the 50s and 60s when all of those people went north to get jobs that people left, like another migration?
Yes, there was the timber boom, which was way before my time, you know, and
mm-hmm,
Ken's grandfather came in here with the timber boom,
mm-hmm,
and there was virgin timber, and they timbered the place, and like the winding road that goes across the frozen hill.
Mm-hmm.
That was a timber road, I understand, at one time. And on up there, right on the creek above where Sarah Jane lived, was called Camp Christie. It was a big logging camp.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a boom-bust cycle. And you know, at Quicksand, where the UK now owns the experiment station,
mm-hmm,
agricultural up there, the timber baron who came in here when he, you know, left his estate there, and the coal reserves here, the Robinson Forest they talk about,
mm-hmm,
that was another boom bust, I guess you could call it that, kind of like
when I was growing up, a little bitty girl, a lot of men in their area also went up like Ken's daddy. Ken was raised until he was in third grade in the coal camps. Camps were undermine grounding in Perry County, next counties, and Harlan County had lots of mining activity, like during World War II and even World War I.
Mm-hmm.
But they always said Breathy County didn't have any coal. Well, our coal was strip coal, mm-hmm. where you actually used large equipment and construction-type equipment and you actually literally excavate the mountains and get the coal.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the 70s and 80s took, quote, the easy coal to get in Breathitt County. So I was really surprised when I came back as a young woman and found out that Breathitt County has coal. And as a matter of fact, it was just absolutely booming.
Mm-hmm.
That was an exciting time. The women were, you know, with a bit boom, you know. They called it Agner, the Agne brand of leathers and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
They became quite taken with those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Do you think now that boom is over, that people will leave again?
No, I don't. I think that has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the government has changed that, because back then there was an attitude that it was a disgrace. I was raised to believe, and I guess I still hold some of that it was a disgrace to accept money from the government.
Mm-hmm.
That you shouldn't take welfare checks and live on welfare.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that has completely changed, and I think, sadly, that young people think it's their right to get anything off the government they can, whether it's Pell Grants or, I mean, from all social strata, I see this attitude.
Mm-hmm.
But I was raised that was wrong, and that you should work and make your own way in the world. And that attitude is gone with the wind.
Mm-hmm.
Through all social classes, and especially here. And some people here, and why would anybody want to go to a city and work at McDonald's when they can work right down here?
Mm-hmm.
And live better with much more freedom,
mm-hmm.
and beauty around them.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I don't see that happening, that there's going to be a mass exodus. And some of the more ambitious kids, of course, being an old educator, I think there's no reason in the world why anybody couldn't have had a college degree if they have average intelligence and want to work.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that want to be doctors and lawyers, I don't buy this stuff that they couldn't do it. They can do it if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And we have many students here that it really has to do with their ambition, how ambitious they are, because we have UK Extension 2 years right here. They don't have to leave. And many programs they can get, never leave Breathitt County and get a BS degree,
mm-hmm.
right here in Jackson. And a lot of them, if they mess up and get pregnant, then the first thing they tell them, when you go into the welfare office, they say, well, we're going to send you to school. You really have a free ticket. that doesn't mean it's going to be easy if you've got a child, but there's no reason, really, I don't think. That's my personal, of course, I come from a different place mm-hmm. about those things. Like I said, the attitude is that give me everything I can get, and I'm entitled. And I was not raised with that entitlement kind of attitude, or I thought it was a disgrace mm-hmm. to not work and earn your way.
So since you think people are staying, do you think the numbers will actually get bigger?
More? No, for several reasons. A lot of our young people just plain don't want to be, there are too many things to do besides raise children. Mm-hmm. And we have birth control. And we have a very self-absorbed, self-centered generation of young people. And I don't mean that ugly, or I love people, young people. But it's just the truth. They don't want to spend their time when they can ride four-wheelers, when they can watch television. And really, it is, and they expect a higher standard of living than like their parents and grandparents were raised with, and feel entitled to it, whether they earn it or not. And for that reason, no, I don't see them, unless they just have accidents, having that many children. Mm-hmm. And it's borne out in our enrollment in schools. Our schools keep dropping and dropping in enrollment. Mm-hmm. And I've heard it said that Eastern Kentucky has old people and young people. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much of that cliche or that generality is true, but there's some truth to it. Mm-hmm. And some of the more ambitious, like technically skilled people, we certainly need them here. But I can see why the ones that don't have an education don't want to leave, and I can see why the ones that have an education choose to come back, because family's family. Mm-hmm. And why would living in a ghetto somewhere or in a poor part of town be superior to this? It wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. So do you think more people came back than stayed away when they went?
No, the county would be running over if they came back. What happened is, just like you, your folks hail from this area, just like mine did. Mm-hmm. But you establish roots, and your children grow up in a different culture, and you want to stay near your children. Mm-hmm. So they stay because of their children. Mm-hmm.
Did you have children who...
I don't have children.
Oh, you don't have children? Okay.
But I taught, in the mm-hmm. all different levels of school and had children mm-hmm. around me.
So you had lots of children.
Yes. And also, drugs are absolutely destroying us, our young people in Eastern Kentucky. And they, drugs really started with my generation in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And there are several of those that are 50 years old that are using drugs. And, of course, they grow their own marijuana here. A lot of them do. But the drugs of choice now are doctor's medicine. And like OxyContin and hydrocodone and Xanax. And, of course, we had them in the schools, too. And this has been going on for years. And OxyContin especially is really lethal. And so many of the kids that I taught have just died from overdoses. It really knows no social class or age group from 50 years old on down.
Mm-hmm. Are there, during the 60s, do you think, were there any other sort of changes to this region?
Well, the roads were the big change. When I was in college, Highway 15 that you came up,
mm-hmm.
that was built. Prior to that, you would have spent 6 hours coming here
mm-hmm.
on a little two-lane road that winded and made you sick at your stomach
mm-hmm.
getting here. So that was one of the biggest changes. And, of course, the Internet and the consolidation of our schools. But the roads was one of the really big impacts. That television and telephones and just the infrastructure that we have. Now, Blacktop Road, like we got out there, man, that's still highly prized in this area.
Mm-hmm. So did that start taking, like, were the roads?
Well, I really think it started taking place when I was just a small girl.
Okay.
In the 50s it started, because we got our road and the consolidation of the schools began.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those two factors are some of the biggest things that happened. And also more people started going to college and becoming more educated and because they had access. They always had ability.
Mm-hmm. So the roads were
the one roads, of the, big the infrastructure, that gave them. Telephones, that kind of thing. It was just the education consolidation of schools, education and the roads. I think were probably the two, and the coal boom was a tremendous, you know, brought new buildings. New lifestyles, you know, to people here.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of spread money around a little bit. And we got an airport. And also, we got things like the hospital and the nursing home. And in the past 30 years, we've gotten those.
What about electricity? When did that?
Well, really, in the early 50s is when most electricity came through.
Mm-hmm.
I was so little I really don't remember when we didn't have electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we always had an electric stove and we had water in the kitchen, which was very progressive.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people on my creek didn't have that.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think your family had that sort of thing?
Well, I think my father was very literate, and they were a little bit better educated, the Wattses were.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them were school teachers, and I think that had something to do with it. And my dad, he just tried real hard, you know. To get things and worked consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those probably are some, and state and federal regulations also, and the advent in Eastern Kentucky also of the call the trailer, the mobile homes, has been a big deal. There are a lot of mobile homes in Eastern Kentucky, And it seems now that a lot of the people that are retiring are selling their homes out in the country, their land that they can't keep up any longer, and getting them a mobile home and coming to town. And the people that, young people, and I can see why a mobile home, it's immediate. It has all the basic conveniences. And there's land available. So we have an awful lot of mobile homes.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is they just set them a trailer out in their mommy's yard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my mom's cousin Josephine, her home is right next to her.
Because I remember when I was teaching ninth grade, and I said one of the prompts that I gave for a writing assignment was, if you had $1 million, what would you do? And I just grabbed my head and said, oh no, don't we have bigger visions than this? But this kid was very serious, said that one of the things she'd do would buy her a nice trailer and put it out in the yard at mommy's house. So
do you think when when you were young and people were leaving, that you can remember leaving, do you think that since there were less family members around, that everyday life sort of changed in some way?
Well, of course it did, because you didn't have the family didn't have as much help.
Mm-hmm.
And I know my brothers and sisters, and I'm sure others did, would send us money. They financially helped their families, and there was that. And now it's just the other way around. Young people think that their parents owe it to them to help them.
Mm-hmm.
And there was more of that kind of helpfulness. Like most of the new dresses I got, my sister worked at the telephone company in Cincinnati and bought them for me.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they came from the opportunity store, the secondhand store, and my mother was a good seamstress and worked them over.
Mm-hmm.
But to get a new dress was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And especially from the city, you know. So it did change. And I saw, of course, as soon as people could quit raising fields of corn and milking cows and so forth, they quit.
Mm-hmm.
And they had fewer kids to help do it and raise the crops and so forth. And of course, more welfare programs. That's about the time the Happy Path program came in here.
Mm-hmm.
Lyndon Johnson's poverty programs.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell that they had much impact on anybody, except at the time, I guess, you know, they gave a little money to people. But lasting effects, I don't see it.
So were those programs a direct result from people leaving?
Oh no, I don't think it was a direct result of people leaving.
Okay.
Because they was poor when they left.
Okay. Did you, when you were young, did you have this notion that people were poor? Or?
No, I didn't feel poor. I don't really think I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I always had, we had great pride. I think my generation must have been the last that had any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I grieve for that, because I don't like the entitlement attitude of, you know, I don't think I'm that old, but that I see in the next generation out from me in the next. I really grieve for it, because I think it's a sad thing that I think it's a loss of pride, and I don't care if anybody thinks it sounds hokey or old-fashioned, I believe it, that it is a loss of pride and a loss of ambition, and you know, to let the government give you milk for your children instead of getting out and getting your cow and raising it or whatever, or working for it. I think that's more honorable. I just happen to believe that way. And now it's like they're entitled to it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're entitled to all this stuff.
When you were growing up, did you live by what your parents grew and by subsistence?
Well, we did both. My daddy always had a job. And being in a large family, of course, times got better. I'm one of the younger ones.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they were born during the Depression era, and you had to do subsistence farming to live.
Mm-hmm.
And
moonshine a little. It's the way you got a little money. It's the way I understand it. I wasn't there, but from what I hear, there wasn't a lot of cash going around. But there, we had much better food that I grew up on than, and it prepared better. We probably ate too much pork and too much lard. But other than that, it wasn't half as bad as a Big Mac at McDonald's. Like this time of the year, we'd have apples and apple pies and cushaws and squash and turnips and mustard greens. And in the summer, oh man, we had tomatoes and we had green beans and corn and cornbread. And we even had this house here right across the little stream I was telling you about there. We had the community mill where they brought their corn and ground the meal. Now, I just barely can't have very, I was just so small, I hardly remember it. And my dad would take what they call toll, which is so much of their meal to pay their for grinding it. And how did I get off on that? But anyway, we had wonderful food. And my mother canned everything you can name. And the diet was so much better then. Like I said, the only thing I can think of that was, that would, and that's not really any different, was that there was, we ate too much of the lard when we killed the hogs and so forth. And people around here didn't much like beef. They didn't eat very much beef. They ate mostly hogs and chickens and people hunted squirrels and ate squirrels and groundhogs. And actually, the way my mother fixed them, they were quite good. But now, I never, since I've been married, but like they came to town about every Saturday. And I mean, we had the bologna and stuff too, you know, but that kind of hot dogs. And but my daddy thought that was snack stuff that you didn't put on the table.
Do you know when that sort of started changing? When people started changing their...
When people started changing? I think with packaged pizzas coming in here in the 60s. That was one example of changing. And, and also as soon, and I think welfare and commodities and food stamps. Why food stamps changed all that? Why should you raid a garden when you can get the government to give you food stamps? We'd see all kinds of gardens if they didn't give out these food stamps.
How old were most of the people who left and went?
Oh, as soon as you got out of high school.
So.
And if you didn't get out of high school, as soon as you were old enough to get employed.
So would this leave a gap of people that age around here, do you think?
No, there were plenty of people my age. As a matter of fact, the enrollment in high school has dwindled now compared to when I was in high school in the 60s. Because of the size of the families.
When did...
I mean, the health department gives out free birth control pills.
When did that start happening?
In the 60s. The birth was the advent of the birth control pills.
Are your parents still alive?
No, no, my parents are gone.
Okay. When were they born, do you know?
Yes, they were born in 1902 and 1909.
Okay. And they always lived here?
Yes, they did.
And... do you think when you were little that there was a strong sense of community in
Oh, yes, because you were kin to everybody. They were your cousin.
Mm-hmm.
Great loyalty. If we killed a hog, we took a mess to the both, you know, people.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody was sick, you go sit up all night with them. Or if, I remember, like, we had a fan and didn't have air conditioning. And if the old man was sick and dying, you did without the fan and gave it to him, you know.
Mm-hmm. Were communities just your family, or would you, like,
oh, there were visit? People that were distant cousins, but mm-hmm. basically there was a blood or some kind of family relationship in some way.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost tribal.
How do you think people, I mean, did this change a lot when people went north?
Yeah, they started bringing in some different, even some Mexican names popped up, and biracial. You see biracial children now?
Mm-hmm. So it pretty much stayed a community, though, even though they... A community. So it pretty much stayed a community, though, even though they were leaving and coming back, you still had that sense of...
There's still a sense of community here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Walmart's, that has really changed the landscape in Eastern Kentucky and other places, too, because the mom and pop stores have gone out of business. And we used to we all went to into town to shop. That's no longer true. It's along the road mm-hmm. in these little strip malls. And now, instead of going to the courthouse and standing around the streets and talking and on Saturdays, you go to Walmart's to see everybody
mm-hmm.
and talk and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And Walmart's put them out of business, local stores.
Were churches a big source of community?
Oh, absolutely. Churches were, and they still are.
Mm-hmm.
There was what we call dinner on the ground,
mm-hmm.
and foot washings and baptizings, and a lot of times the churches for years, the old regular Baptist churches, you only met like once a month because of the distance and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
The preacher coming and it was just difficult.
Are most churches Baptist?
No, there's all kinds of churches. You've got Pentecostals, you've got Baptists. I go to the Methodist right now and went to the Christian church forever, and there's a Brethren church. We have a church just about on every street corner or in every little road and community.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm glad.
Yeah. Was that how it was when you were small?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
There weren't any,
weren't
a lot to speak of, and they were just little, rather primitive buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And back when I was very, very tiny, we didn't have a church house, and my daddy gave the land and helped get the church started there on our farm.
Mm-hmm.
And they met in one-room schoolhouses, churches did,
mm-hmm.
Sunday schools. And
were they all different religions, or?
Well, they were all Christian religions, not mm-hmm. necessarily with the Lutheran or Brethren or all that tacked on the door. It was mostly people who taught basic Christian doctrine.
Mm-hmm. So, the people who left, the way you kept in touch with them, Was it because they would come back and visit?
Came back almost every weekend, and they wrote letters.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so few telephones that wasn't. And, of course, the Internet hadn't been discovered or created at that time.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember how you felt about the experiences they would share with you? I know you said you were
excited. Oh, they were exciting. They were exciting. And my sister, first time I'd really been out of the state of Kentucky was like seventh grade. And she took me up for a week with her to her apartment in northern Kentucky, Cincinnati area.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, I thought that was real exciting.
Let's see. When you would go up and visit and you would get really excited, would that make you wanna do what they were doing? Or how did that?
Well, education was always very much emphasized in my family, and I knew that I wanted to be educated, and I got the opportunity through scholarship to do that, so I did.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I wanted pretty clothes and cars too.
Mm-hmm. And did all of your brothers and sisters, did they go to college?
All of my brothers have at least been to college.
Okay.
And half of them have advanced degrees.
Okay.
And I'm the girl that went.
Okay. Are you the only girl?
No, I have two sisters.
What?
And of course they finished high school and have done very well for themselves. Mm-hmm. Probably smarter than I am.
Where do they live now?
Well, one lives in Mount Sterling and one lives here in Breathitt County.
Okay.
And after her stint in Cincinnati,
mm-hmm.
when she got married at 22, then from 18 to 22, she lived in Cincinnati, and then she's been back in Breathitt County. She married a school teacher and raised two children, and her daughter practices law over here in Jackson, and her son is like the head teacher at the detention center over here.
Mm-hmm. Do you think she would mind giving an interview?
Well, she might talk to you. I can send you up there if you want to talk to her.
Okay. What do your brothers do now?
My oldest brother is retired from education. He was a school teacher, a school principal, and a central office person administrator, and he's retired. My next brother, he worked in the school system and for mental health, and then he had his own business, and he still is mainly into real estate and that kind of thing. My next brother had a coal truck, and of course, he's retired now. And then my next brother is still working. He had a coal truck, and after that, he just went back to teaching school. And he teaches school still yet, and he's 60, he's teaching. And then my next brother is a licensed land surveyor, and he works for the with engineering for the state highway department. And my next brother is disabled. He has schizophrenia and lives in a personal care home. And I have two sisters.
What do you think has stayed the same about this area?
What has stayed the same?
Yeah, since you've been little.
Well, some good things and some bad things, like any other area. Just like in other parts of the country, I don't think we pick the best political leaders in Breathitt County. They're still vote buying and vote selling, not to the degree perhaps that as it once was, and the merit system with the state has certainly helped with, and the federal regulations have helped with, like, not losing your job. I remember when, prior to the merit system, my daddy worked for the state highway department. Unless you supported the right governor for 4 years, I remember we had a very hard time because he lost his job because he didn't support the right man for governor. And that is a good thing, I think. And I think there's entirely too much political patronage in this area in terms of getting jobs, in terms of how the county money's spent. And I better not say much because my husband's county treasurer. But that's just my opinion. Some of the things, the roles of women have and are changing, some for the good and some for the worse, just like in the nation. The education is, I really believe if you want to get a good education here, you can get about as good an education here as you can about anywhere if you really work at it and are motivated to do that, just like anywhere else. Because I have taught in Western Kentucky, I retired in the bluegrass, and I spent most of my career here in Eastern Kentucky, and I don't see that much difference. As a matter of fact, believe it or not, when I went to Paducah and to the bluegrass, we were more advanced in technology in Breathitt County in our school system, educational system, than they were there. And one of the main reasons was because of federal monies that we got. And so we were talking about what how things have changed. I really hate this attitude that's changed that I call, and it's permeating all of our society, not just Eastern Kentucky, is the sense of entitlement that the government owes me and has to do this for me, and I'm entitled to this instead of working it out on your own and by merit. I think it's a thing of the past. And in some ways, I do believe in giving people an opportunity. Like, I went to college, I thought it was fair. I could borrow the money and pay it back, and I could work. And I think that really is enough. Maybe that sounds hard-nosed to some people, but to me, that's enough. Now, and then this having babies and going to the health department and getting the food for them and all this stuff, I see pros and cons to that. It's good and it's bad. Just, I don't want anybody to go hungry, but I think people ought to work. And there's not a great rush to do those kinds of things.
But do you feel like that sort of?
And I do still think that men have a leg up as far as anything in Eastern Kentucky. But one of the main things that's changing that is the educational system. Girls are higher achievers academically than boys in Eastern Kentucky.
Do you think that's...
That's good and that's bad. I don't think that's necessarily good. It's good for it. I want them both to achieve, but definitely I was raised where women were not valued as much, girls were not valued as much as boys. That's just the way it was.
Do you think it's a woman could get a job in Breathitt County as equal as a man?
Well, a lot of times it depends on who you, just like anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on who you know, and now it's more subtle. The discrimination is more subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just like in the bigger society.
Mm-hmm. So do you think you're going to stay here?
Oh, yes, I'll stay here because mm-hmm. I choose to stay here. I left the beach to come here because this is much more beautiful than I could look out my window and see the ocean, which was kind of nice. But I'd rather look out and see these beautiful leaves and trees. And I have a stream that way, and I have a stream this way. And
mm-hmm.
I have a paved road. And actually, the truth is, I also have wonderful medical doctor here, medical care that you wouldn't think. The stereotype is that, you know, this is a poor place and you live terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this house and the bluegrass and what I've got here would cost twice as much.
Mm-hmm.
And twice the taxes, and I'm sure I'd be paying a homeowners association fee for that road out there and
mm-hmm.
other things. So there are advantages. I can live less expensively here, and I can see my friends and neighbors when I go to Walmart's, and I can have good medical care, and I'm only a little over an hour from Lexington,
mm-hmm.
and I can do just as much on the internet as anybody, wherever I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel very blessed, and I'm very happy here. And I have a church that I enjoy. I don't know what I would be. I've already lived other places. I don't see that I would miss a lot. There's no place that has everything. But this has many benefits, and I've noticed that a lot of people my age are retiring and coming back to this area.
Mm-hmm.
Not in great droves or anything, but and I certainly could live anywhere I wanted to, but I choose to live here.
Okay. Really have any other questions, unless you have anything else you like to talk about.
Not really. I love this place, the beauty of it,
mm-hmm.
the people, and I am aware that certain stigmas have been attached to being Appalachian, and in a way, I think it's their loss because they just don't know.
Mm-hmm. It's true.